upon them. Rirakshun, desire to protect them. Dartha, held up. Uchilindram, uprooted as an umbrella. Eva, exactly like that. Sapta, dinani, continuously for 7 days. Saptavarsa, although he was only 7 years old. Mahidaram, the Govardhan Hill. Anga, without being tired. Eka Kare, in one hand only. Salilam, playfully. When the cowherd men of Vrindavan, under instruction of Krishna, stopped offering sacrifice to the heavenly king Indra, the whole tract of land known as Raj was threatened with being washed away by constant heavy rains. For 7 days, Lord Krishna, out of his causeless mercy upon the inhabitants of Raj, held up the hill known as Govardhan with one hand only, although he was only 7 years old. He did this to protect the animals from the onslaught of water. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Children play with an umbrella generally known as a frog's umbrella. And Lord Krishna, when he was only 7 years old, could snatch the great hill known as Govardhan Parvat at Vrindavan and hold it for 7 continuous days with one hand, just to protect the animals and inhabitants of Vrindavan from the wrath of Indra, the heavenly king, who had been denied sacrificial offerings by the inhabitants of Vrajabhumi. Factually, there is no need of offering sacrifices to the demigods for their services if one is engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord. Sacrifices recommended in the Vedic literature for satisfaction of the demigods are a sort of inducement to the sacrificers to realize the existence of higher authorities. The demigods are engaged by the Lord as controlling deities of material affairs, and according to the Bhagavad Gita, when a demigod is worshipped, the process is accepted as the indirect method for worshipping the Supreme Lord. But when the Lord is worshipped directly, there is no need of worshipping the demigods or offering them sacrifices as recommended in particular circumstances. Lord Krishna therefore advised the inhabitants of Rajabhumi not to offer any sacrifices to the heavenly king Indra. But Indra, not knowing Lord Krishna and Rajabhumi, was angry at the inhabitants of Rajabhumi and tried to avenge the offense. But as competent as the Lord was, he saved the inhabitants and animals of Rajabhumi by his personal energy and proved definitely that anyone directly engaged as a devotee of the Supreme Lord need not satisfy any other demigods, however great, even to the level of Brahma or Shiva. Thus, this incident definitely proved without a doubt that Lord Krishna is the personality of Godhead and that he was so in all circumstances, as a child in the lap of his mother, as a boy 7 years old, as an old man of 125 years old. In either case, he was never on the level of an ordinary man. And even in his advanced age, he appeared a young boy, 16 years old. These are the particular features of the transcendental body of the Lord. Om Agyanitimidandasya Gananjana Shalakoya Chakshurun Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karatmayam Dadati Svambhadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yukta Parakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagarajatam Sagana Raghunathvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesva Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sude Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Namo Mahavaranaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gorjvase Namaha Vanchakalpa Tarum Bhistya Kripa Sindhura Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivishesha Shunyavari Paschyachare Shatarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Kun Guru Divachalam Pungal Delegate Gidim Tarkripa Tadaham Bande Shri Guru Ditanam Vagi Shayashavarane Lakshmi Yasacha Vakshashi Yashaste Hiday Samvitam Nishim Hamam Vijay.
In the Nectar of Instruction, there is a verse that Rupa Goswami, he gives the essence of all advice. He says, Tanam Rupa Charitasu Sukirtananu Smridyor Kramena Manasi rasan manasi niyoja tistan vrajetan anuragi jananugami kalam nayet akilam iti upadesha smaram. And his advice is that one should engage in the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord 24 hours a day. And that one should do this under the guidance of a bona fide devotee and simultaneously follow in the footsteps of a particular associate of the Lord. And according to the degree of one's advancement, one is able to hear particular pastimes. And as one becomes a more confidential devotee, one is able to hear more confidential subject matter. But if one begins to hear subject matter which is beyond one's adhikar, they actually can put themselves in a very precarious situation. Just like a student, if they enter into the school or college, or someone enters into like primary school, and they're in first grade, but then they start trying to study what's meant for like a PhD student. Not only do they receive a proper education in the first grade, but they're simultaneously not able to perceive the subject matter that's within the PhD. So they destroy the position that they're in, and they actually discourage themselves from achieving a position higher in the future. So the Shastra advises us to act according to our capacity. And that doesn't mean that we're not allowed to hear Krishna's pastimes, but rather we should understand them in the proper perspective. So Krishna, he displays these particular kinds of pastimes in order to purify the conditioned souls and attract them to him. So there's different types of pastimes that Krishna displays, and the pastimes of him killing demons, the pastimes of him, you know, defeating the pride of Brahma and Shiva, these are particularly good for conditioned souls because they actually, simply by hearing them, they actually purify us of particular anarthas that are preventing us from engaging in Shuddha Bhakti with complete faith and complete devotion. So this is explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, that the different demons in Vrindavan, they signify different anarthas in the heart. And the particular anartha that is we're dealing with in the pastimes of Indra, and him becoming defeated by Krishna in the Govardhan pastime, is he is displaying this anartha of Ishamana, or thinking oneself to be supreme. And this is potentially one of the most precarious anarthas that one can have on the path of devotion, because the whole point of engaging in the process of devotional service is to understand oneself to be Das, Das, Anudas. We're trying to come to the position of understanding that Krishna is the benefactor, Krishna is the enjoyer, and Krishna is the supreme friend of everyone. So if this particular anartha that's residing within the heart isn't eradicated, then it's very, very difficult to engage in the process of devotional service with fixed determination. So we can hear these pastimes of Lord Krishna defeating Indra, meditate on them, and discuss them in the association of devotees, and try to meditate on how this particular incident that Indra is displaying, this propensity of Ishamana, or this idea that I am supreme, how it's relevant in our own lives, how we carry it in our own execution of devotional service, and notice how it limits us in our execution of the process of devotional service. One of the first things that I thought when I was meditating on this particular anartha as I was preparing for the class is that when one is in a position of thinking themselves supreme, like Indra was thinking, it really blocks our ability to appreciate the gifts that Krishna is giving us in the present moment.
We're not able to appreciate, you know, the deities. We're not able to appreciate the association of devotees. We're not able to appreciate the holy name. We're not able to appreciate prasadam. Because existing in a position of thinking oneself supreme is diametrically opposed to our original position. And in this diametrically opposed position, because we're in an artificial condition of trying to consider ourselves supreme, we have to make artificial arrangements in order to maintain that conception of who we are. So we see in the pastime of Krishna with Indra that although Indra was in the presence of the residents of Vrindavan, although he was in the presence of Govardhan Hill, although he was in the presence of the Yamuna River, although he was in the presence of Krishna, he wasn't able to appreciate them. So if we maintain this particular pride that we see that's happening within Indra, this particular pride that think that I am supreme, and we constantly are making arrangements in order to maintain this idea of who we are, or what we think we are, the result will be that instead of, not only will we not be grateful for what we already have, we'll simultaneously commit offenses to those who are trying to lift us up. So the nature of pride is to think that we're more than what we actually are. And because of this mentality, we're not able to fully take shelter of Krishna. Rather, we take shelter of our own mental concoctions. We take shelter of the upadis that we've developed. We take shelter of the idea that, you know, I've got this big position, or I have this ability. I'm able to do this. I'm able to do that. We take shelter of these particular gifts that Krishna has given us without realizing who the proprietor of the gifts are. And because of this, when we're put into a difficult circumstance, rather than taking shelter of Krishna, we try to adjust the material circumstances, like I was saying, to maintain this idea that I am supreme, to maintain the particular position that we have, to maintain this false identification of being more than we actually are. We essentially try to maintain our pride. So Indra, being proud of his ability of who he was as the king of heaven, in order to maintain this position of who he was, he made all arrangements in order to maintain that particular idea of who he was. You know, he summoned the Samavartaka cloud, and he not only did that, but he inundated the entire earth with rain, and he brought in all these types of winds and rains that were actually meant for the universal destruction. He basically, you know, summoned all the power that he possibly had in order to facilitate the maintenance of his false pride. In order to facilitate the maintenance of his false pride, he was willing to, you know, pull out all stops, so to speak. But despite these devastating circumstances, and despite the circumstances that the residents of Vrindavan were put in, we see the ideal of what we do when we're put in such circumstances. So we learn from Indra what not to do, and we're learning from the residents of Vrindavan what to do. So the residents of Vrindavan in this particular circumstance, even though, you know, Indra was, you know, calling in all forces, so to speak, he was calling in, you know, all the powers that he could possibly conjure up, and he was centralizing it in one particular place in Vrajabhumi. And the whole earth was inundated. The rains in the Bhagavatam I was reading, that the rains were like columns falling from the sky, how big the rain was. And so the residents of Vrindavan, what they did is they simply offered this prayer to Krishna. I found this while I was studying this particular pastime. I thought this was such a beautiful, beautiful prayer. It says, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhaga, Tvam Natam Golukam Prabhu, Tartum Arhasi Devana, Kupitat Bhakta Vatsala. He's actually, the residents of Vrindavan are referring to Krishna as Bhakta Vatsala, that although we're being put in such a difficult circumstance, although we're in, you know, a position that we're not able to overcome through our own volition, you are Bhakta Vatsala. You are someone who's very, very eager to embrace your devotee and give protection to your devotee. So this is really like what the essence of the Bhagavatam is that we see so many circumstances throughout the Bhagavatam where devotees are put in a precarious condition, and it provides great joy to those who are purified, who are, you know, existing in a very high level of consciousness. It brings joy to them. And then for those who are aspiring sadhakas, trying to come to a higher standard of devotional service, it provides inspiration towards what it is that we're actually trying to come to. Are we, you know, trying to maintain our particular circumstance, maintain our pride in order to facilitate an illusion of what we have of ourselves? Or are we, you know, taking the position of the residents of Vrindavan and seeking out Krishna for protection? So we see that in this particular purport, Prabhupada, he's mentioning that there's two types of people. He mentions a verse in which Krishna talks about two types of people. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he says that those who are of less intelligence, they approach the demigods and they're worshiping me, but they're doing it in the wrong way. But in that verse previous to that, Krishna is defining who is his particular devotee and how does his devotee act in accordance to him. He says, Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana parupasate tesam nitya biyuktamam yoga kshema vinamyaham. Thank you. So this verse is explaining that those who worship me with exclusive devotion, who make me their primary object of devotion, their primary object of love and sacrifice, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. So this is ultimately the protection that Srila Prabhupada was trying to offer us. I remember that, or is trying to offer us, rather than it's not was, he is still continuing to try to offer that us. Bhrigupati, a few weeks ago, he sent me this wonderful purport of the Jaya Radha Madhava song, and where he's saying that the members of the Krishna Consciousness Society, they should aspire to become like Gopi Janas in order to receive the shelter of Giridhari. So just as Krishna was able to give shelter through the residents of Vrindavan, although in such a devastating circumstance, we can similarly, if we can qualify ourselves for it, we can also come to the level of receiving that kind of protection. And it's explained in the commentary of this particular pastime in the Bhagavatam that this pastime was arranged in order to facilitate the increasing exchange of love between the residents of Vrindavan and Krishna himself. And the example that the acharyas give is that it's just like a person that's hungry. If he has a lot of appetite, then when he eats the food, it tastes even better. So similarly, when a devotee is put into a difficult circumstance, like the residents of Vrindavan were put in with this particular pastime, their eagerness to take shelter of Krishna is intensified. So in the same way, we should not be fearful of the difficult circumstances that will come to us in the execution of our devotional service. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he used to say that the process of devotional service is not a path of petals. It's a path of thorns. But we should eagerly walk that path of thorns, because those thorns that we receive, they act as an impetus for us to take deeper shelter of Krishna. And not only should we be fearful of difficult circumstances, but we should also be willing to take an entrepreneurial risk in order to push on the Sankirtan movement. Because of the degree that we're taking the risk to push on the Sankirtan movement, to that degree we're going to have to take shelter of Krishna. And to the degree that we try to push on the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to that degree we become qualified to receive the same kind of reciprocation, the same type of protection that we see the residents of Vrindavan receiving. So based on the risk that we're willing to take, and based on the circumstances that we're willing to go into to push on the Krishna consciousness movement, to that degree we can expect Krishna's protection. To that degree we can expect, you know, Krishna's safety and his well wishes. But in order for us to come to the standard of genuinely being able to take that kind of risk, we have to give up false pride. And this is something that our acharyas put stress on over and over and over again, that one has to dumba hitva, one has to give up this dumba and hitva, kick it out altogether. Because to the degree that we're maintaining this pride of who we think we are, to that degree we're going to be relying on our own ability in order to push on the Sankirtan movement. But pushing on the Sankirtan movement isn't based on our ability. Pushing on the Sankirtan movement is based on the mercy of Krishna. And when we accept Krishna as our only shelter, when we accept Krishna as our only ability, our only source of strength to push on the Sankirtan movement, we are willing to do the impossible for Krishna, because we understand that Krishna is in control. It's not my own doing that's going to push on the Sankirtan movement. It's Krishna's doing. So when a devotee is fixed in that consciousness, they're able to go into any particular circumstance to give the Krishna consciousness movement to other people. Because pride, we can only go as far as our pride allows. But with Krishna's mercy, we're able to take the impossible and make it completely possible for the pleasure of the Lord. So that's all I was able to put together in the shorter period of time that I was able to prepare. But I would be really interested to hear from the assembly of senior devotees who have cared for me so much over the past 4 years. Actually, around this time is when I moved to LA about 4 years ago. So I feel very grateful to be back in Los Angeles and to be in the association of all of you. And if there's any questions or comments, or even better, some chastisements or a reflection, then I will be very, very happy to receive them. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Archa Prabhu.
Hare Baldeva, Bharata Prabhu. Thank you very much. I know that you took it on at last moment. I had someone else scheduled to speak today, and they handed you the class last night, so I know you didn't have a lot of time to prepare. Thank you very much for sharing your insights. I missed some of it because I had to help Subhas with a Zoom. They're doing a virtual Prabhupada festival online, and he was having some problem with his computer, so I had to run over there. But thank you. What I did here since I came back was just spot on, wonderful, very inspiring. Thank you very much.
Thank
Hare
you.
Bon.
Thank you, Archer. Yes, Bhrigu Padi Prabhu. Oh, Mala Bhakti Maharaj.
Thank you very much, and I ditto everything that Archita has just said about your class. It's very good. It's something we all have to hear, this principle of pride. But we have to remember that there's false pride, as you clearly spelled out, and there's also true pride. Mm. True pride is something we want. True pride is something good. It's something valuable. And what is true pride? False pride you've already defined. Basically, it's thinking you're something that you're not. And thinking that you become very great, very wonderful, very glorious, and even better than some others who may also be glorious and great. You're the top. You're the dog, which is top dog. So this is false pride, and it's wrong because it's untrue. What is true pride? True pride means that, yes, let us say I become a great Madanga player, or I get great speaker, or a great prasadam maker, or any great thing. As long as I understand, people are saying, oh, this is wonderful. Like I tell, what's the name? Can't remember his name. Well, today's prasadam was incredible. It really sent me off. It was wonderful. So he can do one of two things. He can say, yes, I guess I am getting wonderful. I am getting great. Or he can take a different tact at it. The only reason it's wonderful is that you, my Lord, have made it wonderful. I begged you. I asked for your guidance. I asked for you to teach me how to do it in such a way that you would be pleased and it would be offered to you and you would get the pleasure. And if you have the pleasure and now I'm tasting that pleasure, wow, that's your mercy. And what have I got to say about it? What did I do? I did nothing except share it, enjoy it, and understand the source of it. The source of all good, the source of all glory, the source of all greatness comes from Krishna. If you're praised, it belongs to Krishna. If you're condemned, don't give it to Krishna. It's probably our own ego, our own arrogance, our own thinking that we're, as you said, pride, and that what happens is that you may get condemned. Somebody sees that you're basically beating your chest in such a way like a gorilla, and you think you're really wonderful, and people generally don't like that. So once we understand that, once you know that's what you call false pride, but good pride is to say, Krishna, you're so kind, you're so sweet, you're so loving, you're so wonderful to give me this power, this ability, this skill, all this. Why me? There's so many better devotees than me to have it. If you have that attitude, which is a truly humble and modest attitude, then Krishna heaps more skill, more ability, more practical knowledge, because he sees that whatever he's giving us, we're not misusing. We're using. We're not abusing. We're using for his loving service. And that's all I'll say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah, thank you for a very nice class. Good to see you. There's some pastimes that devotees are put into illusion so that the pastime could happen. Yeah. Like Maharaj Prakrit was put into illusion so the Srimad Bhagavatam could be spoken. Yeah, Arjuna was put into illusion so that the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. So I'm wondering if there's if any of the acharyas have said that there's an element of that in this particular pastime. Because it seems a little unusual to me that Indra, the demigods in general are predominantly influenced by the mode of goodness. Mm. Indra is one of the leaders of the demigods, and it seems like he really overreacted. I mean, First off, it wasn't the residence. I mean, Krishna was instigating. So if he wanted to take revenge, it would seem like he would take revenge directly on Krishna. Mm. Why all these innocent people, you know, innocent animals and innocent people? You know, human beings are generally considered very insignificant. Ravana didn't even ask Lord Brahma for the benediction of not to be killed by a human being because they're so, you know, generally considered so insignificant. So it seems to me that it's really out of character for Indra to do what he did. And I'm just wondering if that was part of the, you know, the Yoga Maya thing, if this pastime also comes in the category of those first two I mentioned, and if any of the acharyas have said something to that effect.
Well, I don't know if that's the exact case, but I do know the point that I was mentioning about the acharyas, what they were saying about the pastime was, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this pastime was arranged particularly in order to increase the love of the Vrajvasis with Krishna. That is mentioned directly. And but in terms of whether it was arranged by Yogamaya in order to, you know, bring out a pastime, I really don't know. I mean, Indra, it seems like a lot of times, all glories to him, he does get himself in quite a bit of trouble. And we do know that, like, although the demigods are existing in the mode of goodness, I mean, there is a lot of, you know, politics that go on in the heavenly regions, despite the fact they're existing in the mode of goodness. So it seems like most of the time, like, when we see in Krishna's pastimes that the primary function of Krishna's pastimes is to glorify the love that he has for his devotees. And then the secondary function, it seems like, is to, you know, set a particular example with a particular person. Like, for instance, like with the pastime of Maharaj Parikshit. You know, when we think of that pastime, yeah, Maharaj Parikshit, he acted out of place, but the result of that was to glorify him through hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami. So despite the fact that he was, you know, put in kind of a precarious position, the end result was that it glorified the Srimad Bhagavatam and glorified Shukadeva Goswami and himself. So these things are there. It would be interesting to research a little bit. I'm sure Archita might know.
I don't have a reference to a particular acharya who said something on the very question that he asked. But in general, we should remember that the pastimes of the Lord are bewildering. Mm. It's that stated from the very beginning, that even the demigods are bewildered by Krishna. And so he can bewilder them at any time for whatever reason. But he himself is also bewildering. When we look at the pastime of Lord Nrisimhadeva coming to kill Hiranyakashipu, prior to his appearance, and Hiranyaksha by Varaha, prior to their appearances, so many innocent people got killed by those two brothers who were sent directly from Vaikuntha. So one could accuse God. How could you make such an arrangement that so many innocent people can get killed just so you can come later on and fight with these demons? You know, so Krishna's pastimes are bewildering. We can't necessarily figure them out. And they're not always explained totally by the acharyas. We just have to accept that if Krishna is all good, anything that he does is also all good. So, like on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, all those who died in his presence, they got their, Prabhupada said in one place, swarup, their original position in the spiritual world. So similarly, all of these residents, whatever trouble they were put into, ultimately was for the good of the residents, of Indra, for everybody. Because whatever God does, whatever Krishna does, is all good.
The Govardhan pastime is also an interesting pastime because it's the only place where Krishna is reciprocating with all the devotees of Vrindavan at one time. He's able to reciprocate with every single devotee in Vrindavan simultaneously. And from what I've understood, that's a very, very significant part of the Govardhan Leela, is that, you know, everyone in Vrindavan is there, and Krishna is reciprocating with every single one of them. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Just for clarification, when you mentioned that the only part that you've there's only one section in which you find out that it was the Acharyas saying is an arrangement. What do you find out there?
So what he asked was that there is a particular part that I found that where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying that the pastime was arranged. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, what he's saying is that the pastime of the Govardhan pastime was arranged in order to intensify the distress of the residents of Vrindavan, so they could, you know, take shelter of Krishna in a more intense kind of way. And the analogy that he gives in relationship to this is just like someone who's hungry. If their appetite is, you know, very, very full, the fire of digestion is really, really high, then when they take the food, like for instance, on Nrisimha Chaturthi, the day before, I got myself in a little bit of a predicament where I wasn't able to eat the whole night. And then the following day was Nrisimha Chaturthi, I wasn't able to eat all day. So I practically hadn't eaten for like a day and a half. And at the end of the day, when we had prasadam in the evening, it was Ekadasi prasadam, and Vishnuchitta Prabhu, the temple president, he was saying that the quinoa dish that was made, it was way too salty. But I was saying, man, this is like the best prasadam I've ever had in my life. And so, you know, because that appetite was there, the taste of the food was intensified. And we practically have all experienced this, you know, when you're really, really hungry, that whatever you eat is like the best thing you've ever eaten in your entire life. So similarly, what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying is that because the residents of Vrindavan were put in such a difficult circumstance with the way Indra was acting, that intensified their want to take shelter of Krishna even more. Even though they're constantly taking shelter of Krishna at every moment, the Lord arranged this in order to intensify the feelings between them. Because, you know, Krishna, he's been living in their village his entire life. They've been caring for him as their own his entire life. And he naturally, because of this exchange of love, he wants to intensify those feelings of love constantly, constantly, constantly. So Krishna makes particular arrangements in order to facilitate these feelings between his dear devotees and himself. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying that this particular pastime is another example of Krishna intensifying the eagerness of the devotee to take shelter of him, and Krishna displaying his ability to give shelter as a devotee in any circumstance.
Thank you. Excellent. I was just wondering because, you know, we also read in other parts of Lila's, of the Krishna's pastimes, when Purnamasi makes all the arrangements for whatever happens there in Vrindavan. So based on that understanding, I can really easily understand that, you know, what Vishnavanatha Chakravarti Thakur is mentioning there, that nothing happens ordinarily. Yeah. So it appears, I need to be corrected, there is an arrangement. My Yoga Maya.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I appreciate the point where you were saying how Indra was in the presence of the Vrajvasis, Govardhan Hill. He was in the presence of Krishna. He was in
right underneath the chin. Right next to your mouth.
Indra was in the presence of the Vrajvasis and Govardhan Hill and Krishna. But still he acted like that. And I was thinking when you said that, you know, that's our goal as sadhakas. We want to be in the presence of the Vrajvasis and Govardhan Hill and Krishna. But here Indra, he actually kind of, in one sense, attained the goal that we're looking for.
Yeah.
But he kind of like blew it for himself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why this disease of pride, it really needs to be like thrown out. Because we could be standing in front of the deity. We can be standing in front of like a pure devotee. And still we may not be able to appreciate it. Like, for instance, there's this video I was watching of Srila Prabhupada arriving in Australia. It's a really famous video. Prabhupada arrives in Australia and all the devotees are so ecstatic to have him there. And, you know, it's that famous time when he came in, when they picked him up in a Rolls Royce. And, you know, the Rolls Royce is parked in front of the temple. It's parked in front of the airport. And when Prabhupada's getting in the car, a police officer is writing a ticket and he slaps a ticket right on the car, right when Prabhupada gets in the car. So despite the fact that, you know, Prabhupada is there, the devotees are there, all these things are there, but due to ignorance and pride, one isn't able to perceive it and appreciate it. That police officer, I mean, he could have engaged with Prabhupada in any way he wanted. We see in like one particular pastime of Srila Prabhupada, he was on a plane and the pilot, you know, he went to the back of the plane when everyone had left and he started asking Prabhupada questions. And it's because he took the humble position. He was willing to, you know, say, this is obviously a very important person. I'm going to ask questions. Whereas this police officer, he simply wrote him a ticket. He wanted to assert his idea that I'm important and this person isn't important. When Srila Prabhupada's the most important person. So, you know, in every circumstance in life, we're given this option. How are we going to relate with Krishna and Krishna's paraphernalia and Krishna's devotees? And the way that we do that determines our advancement. Thank you. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Vanchakopatarumbhishya kripa sindhudeva cha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha.